Welcome, fans of the Justice League Universe. This is the Justice League Universe podcast, where we analyze scene by scene the movies in the DCEU, starting with Man of Steel, going through BVS, Suicide Squad, Wonder Woman, and we've even done some analysis of Aquaman and the theatrical Justice League. But in this special episode, we are going to be sharing Zack Snyder's audio commentary of Man of Steel. He presented this commentary in cooperation with Vero, True Social. We'll link to Vero and to the Vero YouTube version of this if you want to see what was going on. But what we have here is the audio. You can hear from Zach and Debbie and some special guests at the end as they talk through Man of Steel. And if you listen through the credits, we've edited down to the part where Zach and Debbie and Henry Cavill make a big announcement at the end regarding HBO Max, so make sure you listen for that. But enjoy Zach's commentary. He starts with the frame where the WB logo has landed on the screen. There are some kind of stone arches and arcs going around the WB logo. If you pause it there, you'll be able to start with Zach. He will give the count off. And actually, he'll count it off, and then his video will start about a half second or a second after he wants it to. But I think you'll get it synced up pretty well. So I will turn it over to Mr. Snyder now.
Hopefully, a lot of people are watching the movie, and that's why. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, play. Small delay. So I'm going to turn the volume down. Start talking about Man of Steel. All right, so I brought today storyboards as I normally do. So the storyboards are, I love that this cue, Hans Zimmer cue, is one of my favorites. Very moody and just cool. So on this movie, Man of Steel, It's this many storyboards. It's I don't know what this is. How many individual frames I drew for this movie, but suffice it to say, it's a lot. So they're all, what we do is at the end, I have them all bound and, you know, leather. So they're very, you know, they're durable and they're archivable, and so they exist, you know. So let me just go. I was just gonna grab one of them here and take a quick look at book one, shot one, and let's see what we have. It's Lara giving birth. Some big close-ups, looks like. Yeah, there's the page one. So it's Lara giving birth, and you can see the sort of the tableau that I was really digging, this tableau. And then these were my robot drawings. I love this idea that when the baby was born, that there was some sort of, that, you know, the animals took notice, Kryptonian animals took notice. And I think that, I did a drawing of that. There's the doodle of the, and then some says birds fly. So, you know, on the moment of birth. And then here was some early doodles I did of some costume ideas. And this is the Kryptonian council chamber. But anyway, so, you know how I do it. And, maybe I'll refer to these later, but this was the Bible for the movie. I always like this. I like the idea that these this Kryptonian council, just talking about the wardrobe, and Mike Wilkinson and I talked a lot about like how we would depict the Kryptonian council and whether or not they would be, I was kind of inspired by a little bit. I mean, it didn't end up being as much in the movie as you saw it in my drawings, like sort of that planet, original Planet of the Apes, kind of that cool, look like some Mobius style drawings. I always found it really cool and inspiring. I wanted to kind of get that vibe for the Kryptonian Council. The other thing is like, we really relied heavily on this sort of Art Nouveau influence over Krypton and what we were doing sort of in that design. Alex McDowell and I talked a lot about how we would use that sort of Art Nouveau influence on the space. You can see it really on the outside of the spaceships. It's really prevalent. And, you know, in some of this kind of sweeping architecture that you see inside the council chamber, I thought it was really a fun and important element that kind of gave this unworldly but kind of grounded quality. There's Richie Trone playing one of the rebel Kryptonians. You all know him as Batman's stunt double. He's been in every one of my movies I've ever made again. And also he has a starring role, one of the starring roles in Army of the Dead. Really a great friend and great collaborator and an amazing athlete and sort of physical actor, as well as a dramatic actor. He's capable of pretty much anything, and anything I've charged him with, he's been able to deliver in a really amazing way. Haraka is like this, you know, we had this idea for this flying creature because I wanted like to connect Jor-El more with sort of this, he had a connection to the planet and to, you know, it's, he was sensitive to its real, you know, ancient qualities. And I thought that that would be, you know, giving him this flying creature was a cool, way to make him seem a little less, you know, as part of the sort of natural order of the Kryptonian world. And then this Genesis Chamber concept, you know, as this sort of central hub where all Kryptonians were, you know, created, if you will, in this sort of baby factory. I mean, there's care given, but certainly, you know, the idea was that this is an ordered society where they've decided to, you know, population control and all these things are fully in effect. And always like the shot DJ did of the of this baby being taken off by the harvester. It's kind of cool. There's a little bit of blood that you see in the water there. I thought it was really fun. Now, we shot Russell in a pool that we built in Vancouver. It was a giant, it was a pretty gigantic pool. So all the swimming sequences we did with screen. This was a set, physical set, this under half underwater set. We lowered it down into the water. So we had to get a swim up into it. And then he'd swim out of it. And, so we were all in our wetsuits and, you know, with Russell in the filming, in the water here. So this actually was the edge of the tank where we built this this set piece that, you know, where Russell was standing. And he was just going to dive off this thing onto like a pad when the explosion. So that was like a green pad down there that he jumped onto. And then, the pad was 30 stories. No, I'm just kidding. It was 8 feet, so it wasn't anything. It wasn't anything too scary. But he did an amazing job. You know, he's a pretty physical guy, so he's able to do that really, really well. And more Haraka fighting the dropships here. This was a, you know, this implication that there was a coup going on, and that those were sort of the main forces of Krypton fighting these rebels, Zod's army, if you will. And then we have the Citadel out there on its own. And Haraka got shot. That's really unfortunate. I like Haraka and I don't want him to. I don't think that's cool. If you notice up there is the broken moon, you know, which in the comic book lore, that moon was broken by, we all know who it was. Anybody want to chime in? No. but anyway, so the moon was broken long time ago by Doomsday. And so this Doomsday concept I wanted to plant early, that Doomsday is a thing that could exist and that could be brought into the universe, because I really like that character. And I always from the beginning I thought it would be cool to have Doomsday involved somehow in the movies, if there were movies. But at this time, I was trying to, it'd be cool to plant some little Easter eggs that allow it to, you know, us to harvest those ideas for later. This notion of finding Earth as the planet that they were going to send him to is like searching the galaxy, the known universe for a planet. Now, I think that the implication was that they had, you know, clearly they had sent a scout ship or they had some knowledge of Earth prior. So this was also just like a way of planting early on this notion that, and even like Jor-El says at the beginning, like, you know, we sent thousands of ships into like, you know, like, let's look to, you know, just like our ancestors did, look to space and all that. So just starting to get this idea that when we, and Jor-El will explain it when we get to the scout ship, but that was kind of the idea to start to talk about those. And the codex, you know, we're trying to figure out a way to visualize the codex. And I think that this notion that the codex is this piece of sort of whether or not it's the actual DNA from like an ancient Kryptonian, that's a cool thing to think about. There's a chance that that relic, that old ancient sort of fossilized skull was a great organic hard drive, if you will, in which these all these levels of DNA could be stored. That's also a fine theory. But I do like it as sort of visually symbolic of an origin concept, you know, and it has that sort of, I really like this idea that it was like an illuminated text that had this sort of fetishized engraving on it that really spoke to like thousands of years of worship of this object, you know, and that it had been carved by, you know, some ancient Kryptonian monks to kind of get that almost religious artifact quality to it, which I thought was really cool. The one cool thing about, okay, so here we have the Citadel, which, you know, looks like a big phallus. And it, not by accident, of course, Alex is a super cerebral and awesome designer and amazing at subtext and all the things. And this whole notion that Jor-El and Lara were like conceiving a baby and that wasn't a thing you could do. And on Krypton, we wanted to sort of have all these fertility symbols around, even the scout ship, you know, when you see it later, we'll talk about it, you know, has all this kind of very sort of easily identified sort of physical qualities, if you will. But I always thought that was really cool. That drawing, I did a really good drawing, really good drawing. A drawing, I like the shot. The drawing's not great, but of Jor-El coming through the, I really like that idea of Jor-El coming through the like, the gases coming off the little spaceship, you know? And so like you'd have Jor-El come through that before this fight with Zod. Now all this armor was CG, and DJ did a really amazing job in the visual effects houses at making this armor just look like a costume. Part of the reason why we made it CG was because we knew it was a big fight and they just couldn't move, wouldn't have been able to move nearly as well in physical costume. But also on the other hand, I really wanted to make sure that there was no way that you would be able to tell it wasn't real. So when they fought, you know, there was a couple of times where they would have a little buck, a little thing they wore on their chest. So, you know, their fists wouldn't go inside of the armor. But other than that, they were pretty free to move. And it made for this fight to be, you know, more physical. I have that gun. I love those guns. Weta made those guns. And I really like the kind of almost like bone. It's like made of bone and metal. And it looks really, I thought it was really cool. There's this Joseph Campbell quote, probably in Kryptonian, which runs all over the inside of the Citadel, which is the one that's also on Superman's S, I think only in BVS. I don't think it's in Man of Steel. I only think it's in BVS where we put it on there, which was the where I thought to find an abomination, I found a god, where I thought to slay another, I slay myself. Where I thought to travel outward, I travel to the center of my own existence. And where I thought to be alone, I shall be with all the world. Which is sort of a, encapsulates the sort of hero's journey. And for me, it's like one of the great, one of my, the great quotes that I've sort of carried to my life. And I find really inspiring, even just when you talk about the cycle of living for normal people, like, you know, this sort of quest for some sort of spiritual enlightenment, and then, you know, how it manifests itself in your daily life. It's a pretty cool way to think about the world. And I think it mirrors some of the things that happen, certainly in Superman's journey. So that was the, there was a time when we really, I'll be honest, early in the development of the movie, where we talked about developing the language and having them speak only Kryptonian on Krypton and do the whole thing with subtitles and have to have everybody learn Kryptonian. But in conversation, I think we all felt like it just could create a barrier to the viewer and not be as immersive, like right out of the box. But that's why we did go through the trouble of creating this super complex Kryptonian alphabet that you know, you could write it and you can read it if you can read Kryptonian. And so that was the thing I thought was really a fun thing to think about and to develop, you know, this sort of individual language. It's a cool sequence. I like the confrontation here where Zod is like, you know, he's like a man of action, and the idea that these bureaucrats are gonna like put him in this black hole prison for the rest of eternity is just not a thing he's into. And I just think that he, you know, the performance here is just really, I always love that little like head shake that he does where he's like, no. It's really, really cool and fun. And we shot this in up in Vancouver in a giant soundstage. We built this. So basically what you have it, when we're filming, is like this big platform that's green screen around. But a lot of this was really there, all the chairs, the council chairs, and this big piece of architecture. And then that kind of the doorway there, that kind of cave doorway that Zod and the guys came in through originally. I think that was it was a cool set piece to have because we did a lot of work up there. And then, you know, with the fight and with the opening sequence and then this sequence, it was really a pretty beautiful set too, you know, and just all carved by those craftsmen up there in Canada and made it look really, really cool. I think this sequence where where they go into the Phantom Zone is super fun. And, you know, it's kind of that kind of challenge where you have to create some sort of fake sci-fi reality that this ship has to go through into this sort of other dimension. And the idea of these little, almost like seaweed tendrils kind of having to charge the ship to allow it through, I thought was really fun notion. And again, you can see the Art Nouveau influence throughout this entire, all the ships and even the Phantom Zone generator has like a massive Art Nouveau quality to it. And I think that's cool. And I really liked it as a thing. This this was all in the Citadel and I remember we, during lunch, sometimes a couple times we skateboarded. You could skateboard down. So we'd take a break and the way we built it was a big ramp, and it went down into the main chamber where Laura gave birth. So we would skateboard down, and I'm trying to think who got hurt. Was it Shandy? I think it was Shandy. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was Shandy. Someone fell off their skateboard and kind of ended it for all of us. And I was like, okay, no more of that. Debbie was like, okay, you guys can't skateboard in the set anymore if you're going to fall off and hurt yourself. And I think there's video of the fall, actually. I'll try and dig that up. Maybe I'll post it. Pretty cool. Because, like, you know, you could actually get some good speed up. And if you can make it into, like, kind of where Zod came in. So that's always cool when you build a set that's also a skateboard park. Flight to Earth, I always loved the design of the ship. And I remember we did a 3D printed version of it that was about like this big, because, you know, the ship was always going to be CG and there wasn't going to really be a model of it. So it was cool. The idea of having a 3D one was something I really liked. And then so Alex printed me one, and it was really, it's cool. I had it on my desk for a long time with the House of LS on the front. It's not an S. On the front of the spaceship. I really thought that was cool. And I love the way it closed, you know, like that beautiful clamshell way it closed around the pod when it was put inside there. It was really cool. So we shot this this sequence with the fishing boat with the crabber off Vancouver Island, up in Vancouver. And it is, even though, you know, you would say, okay, it's moderate seas, it doesn't look that bad. It was really rough. It was much rougher than it looks. Everyone got sick while we were shooting, not Henry, but everyone got sick. And we were trying to film this sequence, and we just went out to sea with a handful of people, and we just started shooting. And it was fun to do, but it was slightly exhausting, but it was fun, you know, just this small group. John, of course, Clothier didn't get sick either. He's a camera operator. And he's just a solid cat. And there's no chance he was going to get sick. He lives on an island, so I get things. This was a cool, like, I always like this introduction of Superman just on fire, you know, for the people to see him, like, just normal guys. To look at this guy's basically just on fire. And who is this guy? I love that notion. This was a set we built in Vancouver in a parking lot. We built this big, we had cooperation with the DOD, Department of Defense. And so we were by proxy able to use the actual Coast Guard and an actual Coast Guard helicopter in the photography of this scene. This is a big set. And Henry had to, like, we had this big hydraulic thing, and he had to really grab hold of a thing, not as big as what you see, of course, in the movie, but it was a substantial thing. And this was a prop we built that actually sagged. It was like a piece of metal that actually sagged under these hydraulics. So we were able to, like, create that physically. And then so the helicopter taking off and getting out of the way, that was real, and then the environment was built around it. And I remember when we shot that one shot, as it took off, I was in the helicopter in the camera ship, and as it took off, we had to wrap around it, and it was a little bit, I don't know, that I felt a little bit like, wow, that was quite a dramatic perspective change. And they couldn't, you know, when the camera ship is in the blind spot of the helicopter pilot, that's always a little tricky, but those guys are pros, and they made it look easy. Here we have our flashback to young Clark in school. And, you know, I think I did a drawing of this X-ray view of his teacher. Let me see where that would might be. This is all book one, Krypton. This was a lot of drawings of, this is Zod and his cohorts. I drew Zod with a Fu Manchu in the old, what was him there? So that's not book one, that's not it. Let's see, probably book two. Quirk. It's too big, Mom. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, so I just, you know, this was my drawing of the school teacher. And her, like, so that's her, like, skeleton face. There's her heart. Boom, 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 boom. There's Clark going, what the heck? And then here's the kids, you know, in the classroom going, yeah, we're skeletons too. It's scary. You know, just trying to visualize, like, what it might be for this young Clark who has this ability to, this x-ray vision. Like, you imagine that he has to, just like anything, you have to train yourself to see the outside of someone's face. I mean, that would be like a skill that you'd have to learn, because otherwise, you know, it's how your depth perception would literally be, you'd be able to, like, look, you're almost like an MRI or whatever. You can look right into the center of their, you know, the center of their head or whatever. And so you have to, like, it would be a learned skill to be able to see someone's, the outside of someone's face. So this is a sequence where Clark comes out of the water. I know a lot of people have wondered whether Aquaman saved him. I don't know. It'd be cool. I had it in my head. I really wanted to make sure I could get an out of focus shot in the movie. A couple out of focus shots, if it was possible. Just because I thought that's just a thing that if this movie can sustain, from style standpoint, images like that, that are so, you know, I would go around and shoot all those shots, all those detail shots. I had, like, Bill and I, so I had just a camera to the side, and so Bill and I would just run around and we'd shoot those inserts. And when you see at the Kent Farm, there's a bunch of those details and stuff. And I think the first trailer or the second trailer had a lot of those shots in it, a lot of those little pieces, which I really wanted, you know, to sort of flesh out the details of this world. It was my feeling that, you know, the sort of, again, the depiction of the natural world was important to me in reference to Superman and in reference to, frankly, this notion of an alien living among us, and that the natural world would be his way in, you know, would be this thing that he would have a close connection. But, and I just think I was trying to express that through those close-ups or images of nature, or the whales, whatever, polar bear later. That was Mike Justice, who ran to the edge, another longtime collaborator and a great stunt performer that I've worked with over the years. He's really cool. He's also worked on Army, and it was really fun to work with him on that movie. There's Clark pushing the bus out of the water. We shot this in a little, we had the river, and then we had this kind of lake to the side. This is right near the Farnsworth house, which was the house, the Mies van der Rohe house, Mies van der Rohe designed house. It is, that was the house that was the inspiration for Bruce Wayne's house in Batman versus Superman. So where we photographed this is very close physically to that actual, it's a story, it's like a landmark. And we went and visited it, on the weekend when we were shooting, and I thought how cool it was, and it made me think this is like the kind of house Bruce Wayne might live in. So it was an interesting connection, physical connection between where the Kent Farm is and where the house that inspired what would be Batman's house. An interesting lesson there. Kevin is amazing, and I really enjoyed working with him. He's just a great guy, and really just a sensitive actor and very in tune, and really helped us, you know, with these scenes, you know. With the young Clark, it's like, just amazing to have someone like Kevin to say these words, because he's just so good. This, the iconic pickup truck that like makes it through, I think, three movies. Pickup truck. But it's a cool, this was a cool sequence. Shot it over 2 days, and we were fighting the light because I wanted to shoot it in the super low light, you know, for this, you know, sunset feel. And it's difficult, you know, to get both sides in this, you know, 15-minute window where the light's in the perfect position. So it was kind of hard to get, but I'm super happy with the way it turned out and the performances that these guys were able to render, because it's really a beautiful moment. And, you know, it's a big deal, you know, I think for Pa Kent to go to have to, reveal to his son, you know, that he's an alien, which is not a thing, you know, that you have to say to your kid every day. And I think that it's a real beautiful scene, and I was really happy with it. This is a classic, iconic, you know. What I would say, it is a classic Kent Farm concept, that in the basement of the barn is the ship that they brought Superman in. I think that is, it was really fun to kind of construct this notion that, and have them pull open the barn doors and look down, and there's a spaceship down there, and you go down and learn about it. And I think that, this is also, like, you know, Amir did a great job on this sequence, great job on the movie. Amir's a really talented cinematographer, and was really blessed to have him, and he's a cool guy. And I think the cool thing, it was really great. One of the great moments, I think, in this sequence for me is when Kevin says, "You are my son." You know, I found that just that delivery, like, really moving, and that was beautiful. And then I do like, you know, the construction of this sequence of the flashbacks in this movie. You know, that David Goyer put this together in a really nice way in the script. And it was like this in the script, this kind of, we had an adult Clark who was not Superman, but through his experiences was reflecting on his youth. And so we were able to kind of, we start off with this. The first images, like we saw of Superman, were these, you know, where he's saving the people from the oil rig. You know, he's not flying. He's not really known. He doesn't have a suit, but he's clearly this guy with amazing powers. And so then we're catching up with these flashbacks of, you know, of what made kind of Clark into the man he is. You know, this was a sequence that I really, you know, that I sort of felt like I wanted in the movie. And this was from the beginning, I was like, I want this sequence where we see a guy try to like fight him, like a bully. Cause it's like, there's a lot of, the notion that there's sort of Clark is bullied is a big part of the movie, and that he always is like, he's clearly capable of some kind of violence, but he turns the other cheek, if you will. And I think that the amount of restraint and sort of discipline that he has, you know that he's special from the beginning. This was always great. This pouring the beer over the top of his head is a nice touch. And then the beer can, we had a rubber beer can, so he was able to throw it at his back when he walks away, which is a pretty good sound effect, because it makes it really sound like a tank can. And then I don't know if I have a drawing of the what's it called, of the of the semi when it got destroyed. I think I do. I think it was a particularly four. Let's see if I can find three. That's one. That's cool. There it is. So we built that truck. We took a real semi and we stuck some telephone poles through it. Where is that sequence? It wasn't. Oh yeah, here it is. Pushes him. Clark walks out. Then later he leaves, and you know. Yeah, look, the original drawing just had it a little bit less violent, actually. I think my original drawing was, see, like, I didn't even know it was cable. I had the truck stacked on top of the container. And so the guy was like, what? And then there's Clark hitchhiking, which I thought was interesting. The notion that Clark might hitchhike was interesting. Everyone would be like, well, he could just run somewhere. Well, at this point, I don't know that, you know, he's in any hurry to get where he's going. He's kind of drifting. He has this notion that there's something going on up at Ellesmere. So he's going to go check it out, maybe get a job. He's kind of knocks around, kind of trying to find his place in the world. And then Amy Adams, of course, her intro, she's amazing. Our awesome Lois Lane. Couldn't ask for her. I was lucky to get her. And I continue to be blessed by her friendship. She's an amazing person and just a great, one of the great actresses, you know, that's working or that has worked, in my opinion. So she's just a special person. So this little scene, measuring dicks, that's always great. This sequence is, oh, look, there's the anomaly. This actor who plays the guy who is doing the working the keyboard there and kind of like, here's the scary part guy. He was, he played in Watchmen, and he was the guy that brings in the, I think it's only in the director's cut, where he comes in and says, it's Dr. Manhattan. We found him. He's on Mars, right? And then he's the guy that, so he lays out all the Martian, there's a shot where we have all the sort of stills of the Martian surface, and they kind of make a smiley face. And there's a little blue kind of glowing thing. That's how we know he's on Mars. But if you look later on, when we cut back to this sequence and he wakes up to run out and see the scout ship leaving, on the monitors are shots of Mars, because I wanted to make a reference to the fact that he was the guy that was the Martian curator, or he was the scientist that found Dr. Manhattan on Mars. And it's funny that he plays a scientist that is looking at stuff. So I thought it was a cool Easter egg to put that thing in. I thought I was going to get a free camera from Nikon when I did all these close-ups, and did not so much. This was a cool set we built on stage, this kind of snowy cliff edge, you know, where they where we go down and find the tunnel. And the tunnel also was a physical set we built that so this piece was about 20 feet down, that sort of glacier face was about 20 feet down and up, and there was a little walkway that had been carved, and then we built this, attached to it was this cool tunnel. And so, you know, we were able to do those shots of him walking down the tunnel was a physical, cool physical set that I really liked. And then we had, of course, here's a real good example of sort of the Art Nouveau look of these shots. And I think that early on, that kind of weird clamshell vibe was a thing I was kind of really digging. You can sort of see it, I think, in this image of this is the first flight. These are the first flight images that I just stumbled upon. It's cool. It's just a cool drawing of Superman flying. Fun. It's four. What's this top one? Sorry, it's dark in here and the books are black and they're just embossed. That's how you can, so yeah, in the shine, I can see it nicely, but in the actual search, it's difficult to find. Oh yeah, here's that. Here it is. This is the, she's confining the scout ship. Here's the doodle I did. And I shaded it a little bit with marker. So you can see right there. There's a little Clark right there, that teeny Clark. And then this is the ship sort of embedded in the ice. And then there's Lois coming down the tunnel. So that's cool. These are just shots of him going around looking at all the different parts of the ship. And then this was where he starts to see his dad coasting around the interior of the scout ship. He's like a spirit in the machine. I guess when he puts his key code into the thing, it loads Jor-El into the thing. Here's the creches, famous creches. Those are the dead guys. And the, oh, what? One's open. So 20,000 years ago, some Kryptonian landed on Earth. The crew died, except one escaped. Looks like one escaped to me. I'm just saying. That was definitely by design. So stay tuned. And then these cool robots. I really like these robots. They're very, I like their... their tech was really, really fun. And then Henry had to squish, like, I think we gave him like a tin can or something to crush for that sequence, like a green can, they had to crush it. And it was cool that he did a good job. And then they were able to really put the robot in there pretty well. It looked pretty cool. I like this notion that Clark could see your injury and like cauterize the burn and or cauterize the wound and kind of, you know, does have implications that are difficult about his, what he can see and what he could heal and what he could do. But here's the Mars bit. So see on the computer there, that's the surface of Mars. So that's it. That's for all you Watchmen fans. We did toy briefly with having Dr. Manhattan in that shot, but then I thought that was too much. It's no longer an Easter egg now. It's just like actually Dr. Manhattan. He's a Watchmen fan, I guess, in that case. And this is cool. And these are just big sci-fi spaceship coming out of a frozen glacier shot. That's just fun. Nobody doesn't want to do that. The way we shot the, so we have this sequence coming up where Lois is on the little iceberg. So we took a bunch of helicopters with a small group of us and we went up to this glacial lagoon that's up in north of Whistler. And we shot this sequence there. It's a kind of it's kind of a big lake that like where the icebergs slough off of the, off in the face of the glacier. And that's where we shot these little shots. We did it in an afternoon. We just all landed. We had lunch out there. Remember, it was just a handful of us. So we had little sack lunches. And then we did those shots of Lois waking up. And also Amy doesn't like to fly in helicopters. So she did not enjoy the trip up, although it was incredibly beautiful because we were flying through all these giant mountains and, you know, it's an amazing landscape. But, you know, she just doesn't a fan of helicopters, which I get because, you know, they're sketchy, but it was a beautiful day. Now the Daily Planet we shot all this stuff in Chicago. Chicago was a metropolis for us. ironic because, you know, it's people would think, I think you'd think it would be New York. I think in reality, the real metropolis was based on Toronto. If I'm getting my history right, which I'm pretty sure I am. So we had this sequence where, of course, Perry doesn't want her to run the story. And so she's going to give it to Ward Byrne because he's got some dodgy news website where he's able to put things up that are particular. Now, here's that polar bear. We were able to get that polar bear from, that polar bear came from an IMAX shot from some IMAX nature film. We stole that polar bear, and then because the negative was so big, we were able to use it in our shot and have it be so clean and go up to find the scout ship. It was a bit of a find because like it's hard to get shots of polar bears, you can imagine. Not that, especially out in nature, it's not that easy. And now here's Russell in his hologram look with his suit, with his House of L underneath. And it was, we really wanted that moment where he could sort of do his Superman reveal, which is coming up in a bit. But he just kind of, this sequence, the sort of, we call this the, this was history lesson, Kryptonian history lesson. We wanted to use this sort of, they have these kind of liquid metal displays, you know, which we see in the sort of faces of the robots of Kelex and Killer, those monitors, like where the baby was or where Lara's face was, or this was kind of our, this was sort of our display tech for Krypton, was this kind of liquid metal and this kind of pewter color, which we thought was really cool. And then we thought this kind of propaganda style, like that this was a created, sort of a state created, sponsored history lesson. So you got a lot of these heroic angles and heroic depictions of Kryptonian conquest or imperialism. So it was really fun to create this, and I just generated tons of reference, and I think I dig it up. I think it's right there, but these drawings of all this, you know, you can see sort of even the sort of, there's a little bit of a Art Deco vibe, but a lot of it, a lot of this was taken from, you know, real propaganda artwork, you know. And then we have, that's the destruction of Krypton. You see that sort of molten, so it goes all the way. And then there's Zod with his kind of ray of lights coming off of his head, even though he's arguably the bad guy in the scenario. I still think this, you know, image of him in that way is, you know, this heroic image of Zod. It's always kind of, from Zod's point of view, of course, he's right. You know, he gives that speech at the end about, like, you know, rebuilding Krypton, you know. And there is a chance, of course, to rebuild Krypton because, and there still is to this, even in the timeline, because Superman still has the Codex inside of him. So, who knows what's possible. But that's a choice. That's the cool choice that Jor-El gave him. Like, you know, do you like this notion that Jor-El's saying that, like, you had to start again because even your mother and I, we were part of the broken system. So, you had to like go on your own. Now, the idea that this 20,000-year-old ship, the ancestors of the House of El would have existed in, and or I think there's an argument for that the suit was customed by the Jor-El AI that's inside the system. So he's able to, the suit's being generated by Jor-El. That was my That was always my notion. And it's this black suit idea being planted here is that the House of El's family suit would be the black suit, but the suit, the facing out into the public, the suit that he says you'll help them, you know, attain wonders, that suit is the suit of optimism, in my opinion, the suit, the red and blue suit, which is much more, to me, it's a more inclusive, it's a friendlier suit. So these shots, this is all CG cape acting at a super high level, and it's some of my favorite and super cool stuff. That shot, you know, where he's walking, I drew it like a lot of those frames with the kind of curling cape edge and stuff like that. And TJ was really nailed it. So this first flight concept was he's jumping first, right? Like, as you would. I mean, I think that this idea that you're, if you've never flown before, it would be difficult, but exhilarating as it is. But I think that Clark does a, Henry, just called him Clark. Clark does an amazing job, like Henry does an amazing job just kind of expressing that kind of excitement, trepidation. And then also, I think there's this level of responsibility he feels in the realization of this power, you know. I think that that is also evident in his the way he renders this the scene, and I think it's really a beautiful sentiment that he would be able to be this amazing he knows the responsibility that this force for good, but this, it's not without responsibility, I guess is a way to think about. And then this idea that when he puts his fist down, you know, all the like, you know, this, it almost, it starts to let you know, like, what are the, what's happening from a technological, from a, or a science standpoint, you know, as far as like, why are, you know, these rocks are lifting off the ground, and these, there's like this gravitational field or something being generated around them. I'm exactly sure how it works. And if I did, I would certainly not be here right now. But yeah, let me see if I can. I think those were in the end of three, but let me just take a quick look here. So I think there's some cool sketches of the flight. Yeah, like I think this is one of my favorite drawings there. It's kind of fun. So where is that? Where is that? Yeah. I have it as his foot, but those are the floating rocks. This is the cool sequence where Lois goes looking for the evidence of Clark's existence. Oh. That's good. That's the grown-up Jack. I mean, Jack was the actor's name, who went to Art Center College of Design, the actor did. And after this, and I've seen him a couple times up at school. The cool thing about this, the actual cemetery here, is that it was, if you look in the distance, I don't know, I think actually we're shooting on the other side of the actual Kent Farm, is it's right well, it would be screen left. It's like 500 yards away, you can see it. So it's a very, it's really cool geographic. When we did in BVS, when we walked from the Kent farm and they took the wagon through the cornfields, it was a real walk. You could do the real walk from Kent farm to the cemetery. So it was a very, you know, for all of us on the crew and, you know, having been through these whole sequences, it was cool to go back to the Kent farm and then do that walk with Superman. It was very emotional for all of us. This sequence we shot, tornado sequence we shot we closed this small section of highway down in Illinois. And it was, we were able to route the traffic around like two exits down. So it wasn't that hard to do from a logistics standpoint, but it was, you know, problematic to work, you know, to create this tornado. We had, this giant jet engine that would generate dust. And so, or wind, and, you know, move all these trees and stuff, and really blew like crazy. It's water, not vodka. It could be vodka. It's a vodka bottle, but my throat's a little dry from talking. I'm sorry. So, so that's this cool CG tornado. So a lot of this stuff, we had cars on wires, and we had the big wind machines, and then we had the big jet engine, you know, to kind of really, to really make a big wind. Then we have this, you can see those trees and stuff. Like, so this is the stuff we had to shoot with the big fans and with the jet engine, Kevin running through the cars. And I like that blue healer. I remember getting that dog. I really wanted a blue healer for the dog. And so it was, we had a great trainer because he had to run through this. When he jumps out, he had to run through this, wind, and there's all sorts of, what do you call it? We were shooting hay. If you look, there's like a truck with hay bales on it right in the front thing. So we were trying a bunch of stuff at him. And so, yeah, and then, you know, the sort of creation of this overcast look too, because it was a sunny day that we had to build a big silk to shade Parkin, you know, to make it look like he was in the heart of the tornado. Sorry, I'm just watching the movie for a second. That was really, just like, you know, to have Clark not be able to save his father, it's quite a notion, and that he's respecting his father's wishes not to expose himself to the world, you know. That's a big deal. Michael Kelly, of course, amazing actor, awesome guy, Dawn of the Dead alumni. Cool to have him in the movie. Again, this is back in our location in Chicago, our Daily Planet location. We basically took this floor of this building and we turned it into the other planet. In BBS, when we went back, we built it again in Detroit. It was the same. We found like a similar architecture, and then we matched it by sort of building out the interior. But for this movie, we did it all in Chicago. And then the base of the building, the lobby is the Mies van der Rohe building that we used for the lobby. And then we built that, you'll see later, we built that Daily Planet kind of sculpture. And that's when he and Jenny run out of the building. But you know what I think we should do? Like, we're about to go into this sequence, the You're Not Alone sequence. I'm going to pause the movie here on these butterfly shots, and we will see if everybody's in sync still. So this will be just like a 3 or 4 minute break while we sync up, maybe less. And let's find a frame here. This is where I am in the movie, right? On the hug. Let's do it. Boom. So, this sequence where Clark returns home after finding his people. That was a cool sequence because, again, you know, it was late in the day. I wanted to shoot it late in the day. But, you know, it was a lot of coverage and stuff. So in those wide shots, we ended up putting the sun in post a little lower in those trees. And it really was just out of frame. So, and then this stuff, you know, the sun was really low. So, but it was a cool sequence and a great, and we built this, I don't know, the Kent farm we built from scratch. There was no house there. We built it on this property and that we had, and actually we kept it for like a couple of years, you know. It was we had to have it like a security guard stay there for a couple of years and watch it because we just basically wrapped it in some kind of plastic, and they just kept it because we built the whole interior, you know, the downstairs. There was a couple rooms, and then there was a staircase. There was one room upstairs that we were going to use, but we didn't. We ended up using it in BBS, where Lois is Clark's room. But for this movie, we weren't really going to go. And then here's Harry, and he is a secretary. Well, he's not the Secretary of Defense now. He's general. Sorry, I'm looking at his career path. I know the future, so it's cool to when you make a movie and sometimes you get confused about the timeline. Necessarily, just turns the tape. And then, that's them seeing the spaceship, coming out of the Phantom Zone. And I think that the design of the spaceship as this kind of sort of non-standard flying saucer, I thought was really kind of fun because it was very... It's threatening, but it's also unusual. So the silhouette isn't like an easy thing to identify. I like this idea of Clark drinking a beer. It just makes him really awesomely normal and cool. So here's your You Are Not Alone. That's Clark able to, you know, he can see it. You know how I feel about POV shots, so not a huge fan. But in that case, you kind of need to see it because that's important to the what he's able to perceive. He's able to see that actually what it is. And now we get this message. This, I really like the idea that this was like kind of, from a genre standpoint, like this kind of 1950s sci-fi invasion message. I really like this notion that it's like a, you know, Twilight Zone episode or some kind of, you know, what the classic invasion story. There's Christina. She's Agent Ferris and also lives in Pasadena. It's a good friend and very cool. Saw her for coffee not too long ago for our being in a little bit of lockdown. These were some shots that we picked up in Lone Pine. We went up and shot this shot of the, on this, it was when we, near the end of the movie where we shot the big satellite dishes. We picked up that shot of sort of the, what looks like sort of these Tibetans. And then you get this image of Zod, this kind of smeared, you know, he's like on a bad zoom, it looks like, or something. Now we're used to this. This is like a normal, this is like a normal way for people to look on TV now. But I really, you know, we did experiment a ton with how that would, just how that smearing would work and how that, what that look would be, you know. And again, it kind of, this sort of use of this kind of pewter coloring for the Kryptonian tech and, or even just their representation, I thought was really fun and kind of a cool color palette for them, even though on their planet, it's kind of this warm, on Krypton itself, it's kind of warm, but when they leave, it's this other look. But yeah, that gives you a sense of the interior of the house, you know. You see it more, we actually, when we crash the, when Zod throws the car through the house, we had to tear the house apart and put the car in the upper part. And then we had to repair it again because we had to use it later. But the house remained and this kitchen remained. I think we were, but I do think we had to I'm not sure whether we were able to keep all the appliances, but we had to refine them again. There's Woodburn back on the news again. This was Lois's old apartment before she moved to her new place. Clark, it looks like. smaller apartment. Later on. Here comes the military. Cool little escape sequence, but of course it doesn't work out. All this we did in Chicago as well. You know, it was really actually fun to shoot in Chicago. It's a good town for making movies. It's really friendly and good crews, and you know, very efficient place to work. This was a great and fun sequence to shoot. We like this notion. I mean, look, Clark's grew up in Kansas. He has these values that, you know, are culturally part of who he is, you know. And even this notion of these bullies kind of messing with him. You know, again, this is a similar but also, we gave him the philosophy book because we felt like it sort of showed that he was had aspirations beyond like this local sort of Kansas community. But I think that, you know, he definitely, see, look what happened. The guy that was bullying him on the bus changed his mind. Oh, he crushed that pole. So that could have happened. I think that, but like, of course, you know, he has huge respect for and believes in this, you know, his father's place in the, like his father's a farmer. And like, you know, I think that he believes it's like definitely a noble and an amazing, you know, job or pursuit, one's life, you know. I think that, but again, you know, his destiny lies, you know, somewhere beyond. So I think that's a thing he's grappling with. I really like this idea, this low angle with the stained glass behind Clark, with that kind of characters with these red, this biblical figure with the red robe on, kind of gives this notion, it's Jesus, that, like, you know, what is going to be asked of Clark, you know, what kind of life of sacrifice and what kind of questions is he going to be asked, and what will he be asked to give, or if he gives himself to his own, to what he knows to be sort of morally right, like what will be asked and what is he capable of. And I think that's part of it's part of this conversation with the priest. And then I love this image of, you know, this lone figure floating in the sky, facing off against this army. You know, it's a very singular concept. And we shot this, a lot of this for real. I mean, not in flying, but this over was done upon like a scaffolding or in a scissor lift. Like that single thing. And then just the idea that, you know, Superman in handcuffs is ludicrous, but it's clearly like symbolic to him. He says it in this, you know. You let him handcuff you. Like that idea, I think is really, it's cool. You know, that he understands, you know, how it would make them feel better. I mean, if he kept breaking the handcuffs, you know, it'd be problematic, although kind of does that too. And I like the, this we shot back up in Vancouver on stage, built this set. And it was right near the Kryptonian council chamber. So it was a cool relationship there. Having Chris in the movie was a fun, he did a really good job and was like a really cool kind of foil for Superman as a human. And he ends up, I think, coming around, well, he does come around to sort of point of view of Superman, and comes around to his sort of what he perceives to be his moral dilemma. And I like that Chris expresses that, you know, sort of physically, you know, and I think that it's a fun arc to have that character that also has to sacrifice later, you know, in a way that is equal to what Superman's doing. You know, like, it's cool to have these human characters alongside Superman that are doing things that are heroic as well, and I thought that was really important for the movie. I love these kind of iconic images of those two guys by themselves. And we shot this at Edwards Air Force Base, just out in that, on the, you know, they have like this dry lake that they land their airplanes on, and it's just a really amazing vista. And just that, those kind of two figures out there is really, really like a beautiful kind of and cool, frankly, fun image to create. And then now the drops have come. Yora, really get a good look at her here and kind of get a sense of her. Ancha did an amazing job with the character. She's fierce, she's strong, she's dangerous. But also, I think it's an interesting, represents an interesting first contact with a real Kryptonian for Clark, you know, and also just this aggressive approach, you know, of the dropship. I find it really, really cool. This was some helicopter shots we did on the day because there was no spaceship there. So we had to kind of just imagine how big it would be and get the framing correct. We had like a small, I think we had these stairs on a scaffolding. And there was like a green thing above it with a little kind of sun shield to give that sense of them coming out of something. She watched this once over, she gives them, which I think is really quite a thing. She like really gives them the full. So this is this. But it's cool. And then also, so then we had to talk about like these, the breathers and how the Kryptonians, you know, it's taken a while for Clark to assimilate to our atmosphere. And so they still need their breathers, although, you know, arguably they figure out how to get around that. But at first, you know, they need these helmets. And it's also cool because it kind of gives this amazing barrier between the two, and also gives her a very sort of alien vibe, which I think is a cool look right out of the box. So now they're headed up to they're going to go up to the world engine, or the world engine is part of it, up to the ship that they went into the Phantom Zone in. But these dropships, they got these dropships from on their exploration of the galaxy. They found some old outposts. I think you see them in that one shot where they pick up the scout ships. They're all down. And now they're going to switch over. And of course, when they go into the Kryptonian ship, they're going to have Kryptonian atmosphere. And so Lois won't be able to breathe that. So we had to build this breather for her, which was all CG except for that collar. And then this is just cool dock. I always wanted to do it. Like, I like this idea of like this sci-fi docking shots are fun. You know, like this spaceship going into it's very cool sci-fi, you know. Because there's a lot of sci-fi elements to this movie, I mean, let's be honest. You know, it's an invasion film in a lot of ways. And then the whole opening sequence is on another planet. So we had a lot of design and a lot of sci-fi things that had to be resolved. See, this is starting to feel the effects of the And then to see him bleed, I thought was really cool. It shows the, you know, that he's vulnerable, you know, and I think that was that's a big sort of move for us because, you know, I think as a viewer, you think, okay, well, what's he going to do to get out of this? Like he's got, you know, he has superpowers. I'm not sure whether they have superpowers on Earth or how it works, but when he gets on the ship and he coughs that blood up, you're like, okay, things are not going according to plan, which I thought was really cool. Concept. And then, you know, and here we see Zod, and what I would say is, you know, it is a construct, but it's kind of what, you know, what he would imagine it's what you would imagine the sort of antithesis of Superman. And this is the cool sequence where we learn about how they got out of the Phantom Zone and how they got to Earth and sort of collected their Because Zod's a genius, so he's able to, like, you know, put it back together. I mean, he's fixed the ship and get him out of there. Yeah. And then I like these, like, these are cool, like, discovering of the old outposts. It's cool, like, you know, these sort of withered Kryptonians that were left to rot in space and, you know, abandoned basically. But look, see, yeah, there's your dropships down there. So they're able to kind of basically build an army. And then that's where the world engine. So the idea is that the world engine, they were going to be terraforming that planet. And then they stole the world engine and they brought it with them. They can terraform Earth. And then this virtual Kent farm, which we did shoot on stage because we wanted this kind of stylized quality to it. You know, it's like this amazing sort of images of what I would say are, like, again, like these cool sci-fi invasion images where the Earth is going to be turned into an alien world, which I thought was really kind of a fun thing. There's a lot of subtle cues just in the visual effects themselves that we were able to, like, even just like the clothesline, all that stuff, and then now this sort of destruction of Earth sequence. So, like, Earth, and then also the transformation of Superman into what would be one of Zod's guys. Yeah. And then we have this image. This is an image that I've always, like, loved, is this image of Clark and the skulls with the, like, burned out remnants of Earth and just, like, his idea of hell, you know. And I think that it's real powerful and sort of beautiful. That's Metropolis, by the way, behind Todd. It's kind of a fun images. Let me just see if I have the drawings of that. There's some slide. This is the history of that. Yeah. So, like, that's the him going down in his clothes. So that was that's kind of a fun concept. We have they're starting to move into position, the dropships. We're coming up, you know, in a minute or to the Smallville battle, which was a really incredibly fun thing to shoot, and it had a lot of cool sequences in it, and a lot of cool kind of, for me, it was fun to do, like, this notion of a physical fight between Kryptonians on Earth, sort of equally matched, and how that would look, you know, the challenges of trying to create that physical fight. And Damon and his guys put together this amazing sequence after long conversations about how we would have it. And it was a difficult sequence to photograph, though we knew what we were doing. It was only difficult in the sense that it was technically complicated, in that we had to just know all the time, like, what was going to happen. So that is to say that, you know, when you're just shooting elements, constantly just shooting pieces, you know, you get this, what I would say is it's a difficult puzzle to keep in your head all the time, because you have to be able to pre-visualize how all of it's going to go together and make sense of it. And thank God DJ and Damon both had a, you know, we had a stunt biz, and we had some previs, and we were able to like really make sense of it. But as it was happening, it was fun, but it was also, like I say, complicated, and you weren't ever quite sure, like, oh, we've got to hold him upside down here because, you know, the camera's going to be like that, and we just need this element of his head there because he's going to be CG and then he's going to fly out. So there was a lot of that, and a lot of pre-planning, which I think the guy did an amazing job of. I like this sequence where we see the multi-Jor-Els inside the scout ship, because he is an AI and he's not really there. It would make sense that he wouldn't have the same issues as of course a normal person. Right? He's not physically there. So he's just controlling the systems from inside. But of course he's not physical, so he can't touch anything. So cool that light. We made the light, you know, we erased the top, so it's just like this kind of wafer thin, just like blade of light, which is kind of a fun. There's the IHOP. Smallville water tower, very iconic. Look at her, she's doing good. Put those guys out of the way. Lois is making her way to the. Okay, he's still there. It's cool. That was like three Jor-Els in a row. This was cool, and I like this where he's like anticipating the. He's anticipating the like trajectory of the punch. That's Samantha Wynn, who I worked with on tons of movies, and who is a really amazing performer in every way. And she also has a great part in Army of the Dead, and you'll get to see her in that because she's really amazing. And she has the not only cool drama that she renders for the movie, but she also has a lot of cool. She does a lot of cool action sequences as well in the movie. So that's really fun. Also coming up, you'll see is the visual effects guys put a hot dog truck in the movie, and it's coming up. I think see it a couple times, but I have it in my office. It's a little hot dog truck, and it has it's all over the place. But we'll see it coming up in a minute. This was you know, image that I drew of sort of the savior kind of image, which I meant as a iconic reference to sort of, I feel like, the intent of at its base concept, this savior imagery. But also, like, you know, in a kind of, you know, what is the price? This was a fun sequence to shoot. And I think, let's see if I have these images, drawings of that. Because I think we have some of that stuff. Turn. And what is this? Yeah. Here's Ma Kent. She's minding her own business. And dogs barking, and then these drop ships are coming into the backyard. I really like that one shot. That's it. That's this right here. That's the drop ship. And then that stuff is. Them coming down and landing in the cornfield. This is coming down to intimidate and date Martha Fiora. We always were like, get off my land. Like, she should have had a shotgun. Always thought that would have been funny. She like, and then here's Fiora going into the, here she's going into the barn. See, there she goes. It's a lot of books. This is a... This is like a little frame that I drew. Oh, it's like Superman coming to a building. This was fun. I think the hot dog truck. Oh, we just missed it. Oh, it was right. You have to go back. I think it's right. It was right there. Flew over it. It was coming down the road. This is like when I think the first time where we really see him like lose it. Superman. You know, like really, it's cool to see him like. I was like that idea that he's a little bit out of control, and that's an interesting. That's the thing you don't want to be around. This was a difficult thing because we had this canopy that when the canopy fell, it was on a hydraulic, and we blew it because the guy's name who was operating it, the canopy, his name was similar to the word canopy. So he was going to, I'm supposed to say canopy, and then they're going to say his name, and then I think he heard something, and then it fell. But we were able to sort of set it back up and do it again. But we thought we only had one take, and then of course we got the second one out of it. His name wasn't Canopy, though. That would have been cool. That's just the kind of thing that happens in movies. You put the guy who's named Canopy in charge of Canopy. So when I say, I'm going to say your name, that will be you getting ready to drop the canopy in this canopy, whatever, you know what I'm saying. This was cool. Take that away. And now let's finish off the Kryptonian. That's cool. And then this is again like 1950s small town with Namek and Feora, and they're like these crazy China aliens. These are some of the great, I love these shots of Henry with that little shine in the S. And he's kind of just trying to get everyone to like lock their doors and hide because this is not, you know, he doesn't want anyone to get hurt. And so these were the DOD little birds that we had with our like, with Chris's like, what do you call him? You know, his like, Special Forces guys on them, and then the A-10s, the Warthogs, which are amazing. We did a bunch of, looked at a bunch of video and saw a bunch of tests with the 20mm Gatling guns in the front and how they operated, and it was really, they're really quite scary and powerful pieces of equipment, but. This is, you know, the sort of this little war sequence, and you can see it's cool to see like how they confront, physically confront these planes. Now, we were saying, like, we don't know that they, and when we were talking about it earlier, we were like, I'm not sure if they know how to, if Namek or Feora know how to fly necessarily, know how to jump. But I don't know that they know how to. Like they could change direction in the air. Like that's a thing you have to learn, I think, a little more practice. And Superman kind of had to do that. There's a small advantage, yeah. I'm trying to remember where we shot. Okay, so this IHOP, the interior was shot in, oh, there was the hot dog truck just went by in the background. But interior of this IHOP we shot in Vancouver. And that close-up we shot in at the real IHOP in Illinois. So there was like a lot of mixing here. This was a set we built inside in Illinois. And that was like one of the first images I shot with my Polaroid camera. I shot an image of him against the safe. I think Clay shot the actual photo that we released of Superman against the safe, you know, with sparks. And it was just like a cool, it was a cool image of Superman. It was like our teaser. I think one of our first teaser images or in production images that we had. And it really was, I thought it was really quite cool. Kind of, I love this idea, you know, just as an image of him against, you know, half destroyed safe. See, and this was the stuff that we really had to like, we R&D'd this really carefully, and Damon did a lot of like, the idea that we had like, it was like some wire work and some just like, you know, the actor would roll out of the way and then we'd mime that there was like a, you know, someone there. And it was really cool to see it come together just as we planned, but it was tricky on the day, as I said. This is cool. It's a lot of, you know, going with the, like with the SEAL team or whatever they are. The, I think we had to create a branch. Like these are, I think, Air Force guys, but it's cool. There's a good, it's Ben. Ben is a friend of ours, and he was a Navy SEAL and came and worked with us on this movie. Ended up having to do a little bit of acting. And did a good job of it. This right here, I thought was really nicely done. It's a CG shot of the helicopter crashing. It really feels good. The rotor is like pounding into the ground. And stuff. And this sequence I really enjoy. This is like what it would be like, I think, to fight, for humans to fight, you know, someone with like pure skill set. You know, you can see it's like not a thing you could do. You know, you think about how you have to interact with a superhero of that strength, you know, against like what I would say is just a normal person, and it's not going to work out. And that's the thing with Chris's character here, like when he stands off with him, with her, he's it's just a super brave thing, because I think he knows that like if the guns aren't going to hurt her, then I don't think anything else is. And there's this weird, I think, sort of mutual admiration. And I think her view of Chris is that he's, you know, he's a human, but he's showing like what I would say is intense bravery. So she has a team of respect for that. She has some sort of cryptic warrior ethos, you know, like, which is fun. And then we have, you know, where Helen gets a little messed up and he gets clobbered by a freight car. Now, I mean, the truth is, even this locomotive engine. So it was cool because we built this, we ended up building this locomotive engine and putting it in the Sears there. I think we built that Sears because they were a partner. And I really wanted them because I felt they really kind of helped with making sure. You can see the taco truck back there again, driving around. It was like on its way, I guess, to Smallville. That was the Easter egg the visual effects guys kept. But they sort of planned it out so it would arrive at the right time. The hot dog truck. Did I say taco truck? There's a taco truck in Army of the Dead. So we're talking about taco trucks, but this is a hot dog truck. Superman stepping out from behind the car shot. I was puppeting the cape for this shot. I remember it quite well. So I was there with that's me kind of swishing the cape in front of the camera, you know, trying to get the right cape acting. Clearly, you know, I think these guys saw that he was fighting against them and that he's not an enemy. And so he's going to acquiesce to the soldiers are letting him pass. And then Chris has this moment with him where he realizes that he is an ally, which was a nice working out. And then I think from this point on, you know, Chris is down with the cause as far as whatever, you know, Superman is there to help. This is the what I was talking about before, where the truck was in. We had to put the truck in the house, and we had these images that we had created of sort of memories of Clark's life we had in these photo albums, and those were fun to shoot. We shot them in pre-production, you know. We actually shot those with Kevin, you know. And then I think we got a couple shots that he had sent us just from his life of him fishing. I was grateful to have those because, you know, they really gave a little bit of context for you know, what their lives together might have been. Like, it went, you know, classically how, you know, you'd imagine your father in these kind of iconic images, you know. This, of course, was another set that we had in Vancouver, this big control area of this of the Kryptonian ship. And now we're learning that Zod knows that the Codex is inside of Clark. And like, all he has to do is get it out. So then his plan can be complete. Kenzie. More vodka. It's not vodka, stop it. So now it's them dropping the world engine, which again, you know, it's a similar technology. You know, it has a similar shape to the Phantom Zone chip. So the notion is that they would use the Phantom Zone chip to reflect the power from the world engine and thus start to terraform the Earth. This kid was cool. He was like a day player, you know, at the, this is our Bora Bora second unit stuff that we picked up. We ended up going there, same place, to get our PBS shots of the piece of kryptonite under the ground. But anyway, this kid who was this day player who came in, really nice guy, really good actor, but he had the line in Superman, to call him Superman like that, and I really feel like it was a really cool kind of thrown away and like beautifully irreverent reading. I really like how kind of subtle it is and not overly, you know, there's not a lot of pomp, but the circumstances around it is very, it's very, it's really kind of fun away. And it's kind of cool. Now here's the And here comes, yeah, now they're going to be in the process of terraforming. We like the idea that the energy dispelled this kind of pyroclastic cloud. I don't even know if that's right, but you know, it's a volcanic. It has some volcanic quality to it. You know how volcanoes are world shapers and world creators, and we wanted to have like this quality of a volcano and a hammer mixed together. Imagine. It's probably bad. Probably not a very good thing to have happen. Volcano and hammer, I mean, put together. And then we have these, now we begin the process of terraforming. And I think that the notion here is that, you know, this idea of what happens to Earth, what happens to us, there is no us, is a pretty strong and real consequence. Is a very real consequence to the, yeah. Oh, look, Debbie's here.
How's it going?
It's going good.
I'm going to join you.
Yeah. You remember the...
Oh, the destruction. I came at the destruction in the world.
You came to... Oh, yeah. See, look. Superman. They call him Superman. Do you remember this part? This was in Vancouver. We built this in Vancouver, this sequence in Vancouver. That was the... the control area. Remember, we built that on a set. That... I think actually we built it in that school. I think, now that I think about it.
We did build it in that school.
Yeah,
I don't remember what that school is called.
Yeah. Harry. Monitoring.
It was great to be at Edwards Air Force Base, though.
Right?
Yeah.
Here, talk to him for a second. I'm going to go. Do you remember the Edwards Air Force Base part?
Yeah, I do remember. It was the first time I was ever on an Air Force base. And I remember actually Sage was really little. And right when we were doing this scene, I have this amazing photo. She had this little hat on and a little sweater. And Henry held her with the planes in the background. And I have a similar one with Cash and Batman. And I have these two just amazing images of the kids, because these heroes have been a part of their life growing up on set, you know, with them. And, you know, they don't even know, like, we'd be like, oh, Henry. And no, that's Superman. So they were just these heroes. And they would always say, like, oh, who are you going to work with today, Daddy? Are you going to see Wonder Woman? Are you going to see Superman at work? So it's kind of a surreal thing. And I remember when we went off to do this movie, Sage was literally 3 months old, and we went on the road and started shooting it. Yeah, I'm ending up watching it more than actually talking about it. I'm definitely okay. Not as talkative as Zach.
I'm sorry about that. That's cool. That's fine. I heard you talking about the babies. Do you want some coffee? Oh, you don't have a coffee.
No, I'm fine.
I'm going to get one more little cup of coffee. I brought this coffee down because I thought I would probably need some coffee during this movie. But I've only had one cup, so I'm not super jacked. That will change hopefully soon. Well, not hopefully. I mean, it's fine. I really loved, you know, DJ and I talked a lot about just how we would do this, this sort of like area inside the stream of the world engine, because Superman's got to destroy it. He's got to fly straight. You know, we had this notion that he'd fly straight up the, oh, it has these defenses, of course, too. These, like, again, it goes back to that kind of what I was saying about that this is the, it's almost like the displays on Kelix and Kilor, or the history lesson technology, that kind of liquid metal, that pewter. Those are the same defenses that the world engine has to fight to try and stab Superman. These kind of tendril arms that, like, try and destroy him. So it's it was cool. It was cool that, you know, he was able, after he defeats that, though, that he's got to end up, after he gets thrown down, he's got to end up flying straight up that, right up the beam of the destruction. So it was a lot of, like, is it anti-gravity? Is it, like, what's happening inside that? It was fun to create that, talk about that. What's it like inside there? So, yeah. So, you know, he's having to fight that. So this is what I was talking about, the Mies van der Rohe building here. I'm going to just also just give you a sense of where I am, just to give you a chance to catch up, because it's right near here, near the Zod battle, and I want you to see it. So this is where I am right now. I don't know if you guys are there, but it's them running out and facing this massive insanity. That's kind of where I am. So if you got a chance to sync up, this is the building falling.
This was crazy to shoot too, because you remember there was like some kind of protests too. So like when we were shooting this at the time in the city, I don't remember what it was, but yeah, some kind of strike or something, but people were all over. And it's hard enough closing down the city with all the extras.
I mean, it wasn't protesting us. It was
not us.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good.
It was something. I don't know what it was, actually.
That's cool if they were. Yeah. You know, I don't remember it that well. Because I remember we did the, on that same time, we had to do the sequence with Henry riding the bike to the Daily Planet. Yeah. And that was the same loop we were running around on, because there was no destruction on the day. I think we had some wind machines and stuff. There was
we were blowing stuff.
Yeah, but we weren't really disrupting the city as much as it looks like we were. We really weren't. It wasn't, our influence wasn't that strong.
I love these scenes with the two of them.
Yeah, they're really fun. They're really cool. Their interaction is really quite cool.
Well, they're both such amazing actors, too.
Oh. Carlos says it was Occupy Wall Street is what was going on.
Oh, Occupy Wall Street. Okay, that's what I knew there was something. I remembered. It was hard to, like, get around and get the trucks, and I just remember logistically it was hard.
Good look at the scout ship there when it takes off and heads to town. It's heading to Metropolis. Yeah, you know, it's I really wanted also, you know, it's coming up now, but the Superman Zod fight in the city, you know, we always talked about it like a, you know, this insane, like, ultimate barroom brawl, you know, like, where you really, the stakes were the world, you know, like, literally all life on Earth was at stake in this fight, you know. And that was the sort of directive when we were working on putting it together. This is cool. I remember this set. We built this in Vancouver. It was this, this Ballendale building set. Guys, so the set really only went like, you know, by just that first car there, the one, maybe not even that far. And then the
that was a green screen beyond that. And then we built that giant pile of rubble. And actually on the backside of that rubble really is where Superman comes into, where he and Lois end up before he faces off Zod. So that rubble kind of went, you know, we used both sides of it, even though geographically it's not the same spot. We were able to use both sides of it to make it feel cool. And also just because, you know, it's not like you have, you know, you don't have infinite resources. So you'd use your pile of rubble, use both sides of it. You know, if you use one side, you're kind of wasting a big part of it. This is a great cue. You know, I really love this cue. Hans did an amazing job in this little section right here. I got to say, you know, for me, my favorite Hans cue is, even though it's not that crazy, it really just is the Superman. Dun, dun.
Yeah, that's mine too. it's so simple, but it's so emotional.
You know, it's just, it's really simple. And I remember he just played on the piano for me and I was just like, that's amazing. Like, it's so cool. And you know, it's so iconic. And even now when we use it, when we use it in BBS and, you know, you can imagine it, what it would like, you know, every time I'd like to see Superman in some, what I would consider, you know, emotional or traumatic moment for him, you'd want to, you know, now we're used to that theme and you hear it and you know what you're seeing, you know, it's like a beautiful sort of way to reprise the emotion that you've gotten over like three movies that you would be able to like hear that cue and know where you are emotionally is a really cool, and it's a difficult thing, and it's a cool thing you get from you know, the sort of breadth of this universe being realized, you know? This was cool. And so we shot all this stuff inside a real cargo plane at Edwards in a hangar. And then that was a green screen out there, but this was the real plane. And then we would, so we had our pod inside the spaceship inside of a real cargo plane. And we really did it, you know, for real. So that was fun. And it was kind of cool for the, Air Force guys, because we had the real Air Force guys who, you know, worked on the plane to have to strap it down and tell us how it would really be, and they were in the scene, and it was I think fun for them to be part of it, because it was fun for us to have them to tell us how it would really, you know, how the plane would really work and all that. So it was really cool. And then we had to build the cockpit we built on set, because, you know, he has to fly it, he has to actually do the work of flying the plane. And then when he fights, when Fiora comes through the wall, that was going to have to be a real plane. Here she comes. But that was going to have to be not the real plane, because we were going to have to bash the walls out. So, then figuring it out. Here comes Fiora. Which is cool. Oh, it needed to be twisted. That's always difficult. It's a Rubik's Cube. I love that. Hilarious. See, those are the real guys, the real Air Force guys who were operating the thing. You know, Miss Lane. Okay. You know, and then this is what I was talking about as far as the cockpit set, because you got to and you get a little bit of the Feora, like super fast fighting, which I like. And then like, there's my boyfriend. And then like, of course she's just gonna, she has no like, you know, But again, I don't know that she even conceives for a second that what Chris is capable of. You know, as far as sacrifice. And I think that's the cool. That's the cool thing about this, is these people are basically doing what Superman or anyone would do in that situation, you know? And then the cool thing about, I like this because that's the angle you see in BBS of the plane going into the Phantom Zone spaceship.
I do like them all getting sucked up.
Yeah, they're going into the Phantom Zone. Yeah, you could always, I guess you wonder, are they in there?
I feel like they're in there.
I think they're in there.
I think they are.
I mean, is there a chance to survive inside the Phantom Zone with no suit on? I feel like possibly.
Mm-hmm. They are Kryptonian. Mm-hmm.
That's true. I think it's cool. I mean, it'd be cool to imagine that means Theora could return.
You never know.
You don't. I remember this shot was more complicated than it looks. This is what I was talking about. The backside of this set right here was where Jenny was underneath there. Becca was underneath that. The backside of that. So then we said, oh, let's use that side of the set and we'll just continue it. For the kissy scene. But that fly-in was difficult because we had to do this double wire work thing where like they were both on a wire and we brought them in so they could land. So it was like real, it was a real wire shot where they, you know, like we really did, it wasn't CG. They really like came in on a wire and landed. So that was slightly trickier than you think. And it took a long time. I remember Damon did that shot because I kept coming over and going, how's it going? And he'd be like, oh, well, we're trying them again. You know, it was like a, you know, 50 yard run on a wire. So it was quite a complicated little setup. More than, you know, it's one of those things you think, oh, that's easy, right? You just land with, he'll just take Amy and somehow they'll do it. And again, it's like not that easy. This was what I was talking about a while ago, where Zod was, you know, talking about building a new Krypton in the smaller. This is a really hard shot because, of course, this is a full CG costume. So he had real dirt in his hand. And he, you know, I think it was a green glove, and he had to let the dirt like roll off his glove and create underneath it that armor. So it was like a really, it looks like a nothing thing, and just dig some dirt up, but it's literally a super complicated visual effects shot. Michael's so good. I really was lucky to get him for this part. He's an amazing actor and a very intense guy. He has an incredible sense of humor, but he also just was scaring Debbie and everybody.
I said he was so kind always, but he's so in character all the time and he's super serious. And then all of a sudden he breaks and you realize he's just a really nice guy, but he was a little scary.
But he would joke around all the time. Like he would be in this mode, but he would still be kind of sort of joking. So yeah, once you got it sort of in his rhythm, you could tell, but I feel like he was scary from a distance.
And he's physically imposing too.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Okay. Strong. Henry would say he was super strong. Even though he didn't really train that much. He was one of those guys that just like naturally strong. This was a set we built. I mean, this was a set we built. This is a CG set we built. So yeah, we did a lot of this. This is just a lot of green screen. Because like we had to do this interactive lighting and get the I-beams to work. And then, you know, DJ would go in and just rebuild their faces because they're so, if you look at the sort of like subsurface lighting, you can see like they're lit from inside. And so it's a really complex thing just to make someone have, because when we talked about the heat vision as a concept, I was like, let's have, when they charge up their eyes and do their heat vision, we should have it like internally, you could see it glowing, like, you know, making their entire head light up. I think in a couple of shots, you can sort of see their cheekbones and stuff like that. there's a LexCorp reference that we wanted to just lay in there ever so slightly. It was fun to put that LexCorp logos in, because it was a cool thing to reference a bigger world. I thought, you know, at this point I had this notion that there'd be that we could have a bigger world, you know, for a bigger world for Superman to exist in, you know, because he needs people to fight. You know,
this is one of my favorite parts.
Oh, running up the building.
Yeah, I love the running up the building, and then when they collide.
Yeah, because Zod can't really quite fly yet, right? So he's just starting to he's starting to figure it out. So that's why he had to kind of claw his way up the building. You'll see him start to get a sense of his flight in this next sequence. This is kind of a funny thing. It's funny, I don't know about funny, but if you notice the sign when he hits it, it goes from 106 days to 0 days of safety. It's not. We thought it was, you know.
This is the moment.
Yeah, where he learns how to, like, he sheds his armor. He doesn't need it anymore. Really, the truth is he knows that it's like, just, it's like he's stronger than his armor now, right? So what does he need it for? It's a cool little beat too, where you see he has the glove on, and then we go to the feet, and then the glove falls and he floats. And then also to harken back to what, you know, we were talking about before, when Superman took off on first flight, and when he put his fist down, those little pebbles kind of swirled up around it, which is a fun thing. This also sequence that I was really happy with and thought was really fun, the flying through the streets and starting, and also this sort of approaching dusk look, you know, which I think is a really interesting look for the city, where the lights are on, but it's still just ambient light in the sky. It's kind of a great time of day, and an impossible time of day to shoot. Not impossible, but difficult to shoot that time of day at scale. Also, if you notice that spin around shot, if you ever click through it, frame advance it, I think the final frame is like an iris. You know, that's how they get closer, and then it's pretty crazy. So this is a Wayne Industries. You can see there briefly the Wayne Industries logo on the satellite. His hand scraped through it. So Bruce Wayne is somewhere around. Well, we know where he is. He's just right there, actually. He's right. He's just in the city there. By the way, he's looking up at this moment right now. Yeah. Just lost one of his satellites. He's pissed. I'd be pissed if I lost the satellite.
I was cool shooting the train station.
Yeah. This is a cool train. You remember, like, it's in Untouchables. Remember the Untouchables movie, the Brian De Palma movie? They use that same staircase carriage. For the baby carriage. Yeah, that's right over there. Which is cool. And then the family here.
Very controversial moment.
Family. Well, listen to the music here. It's also, you know, this is also all about him ending up alone. You know, like, we can debate forever about whether Superman would kill Zod. But also, the real question is, it's his own, like, his legacy, his people, you know, he's choosing.
And choosing
us. And it's like, that's why he's so hurt. And he's also, like, for him, I feel like he's torn a piece of himself out, you know,
it's also reminiscent of his father and not being able to save his father, to me.
Mm. Well, the emotion.
Able to save these people.
Yeah.
They would have been toast.
They would have been toast, for sure. Kind of a fun. It's It's kind of a fun bit. And I love this tableau right here, by the way. It's beautiful. Those are all CG ruins over there. And then this is like what I was saying earlier, like right up the street is where we shot that Tibetan sequence. You know, these are like the things like in the morning, let's at dawn, we'll shoot that Tibetan sequence. Then we'll get on our, then we'll head over to the dishes and we'll do this sequence.
This was our last day of shooting. I remember that.
There's a picture of Henry and I, you know, with our arms around each other out in this desert.
I think we had a little champagne at the end of it too.
And why wouldn't you? Out there we had champagne.
Out there in the desert.
Getting drunk in the desert.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think it was like we were working
this
much.
Small amounts. Cool. And then this guy is monitoring Superman. Is he really Swanwick? I don't know.
Henry looks so iconic here, though.
Yeah, I like the heat papers.
Yeah, I do too.
It's cool.
And then he's gone.
That's a great line. Oh. What's going on? My phone is.
I don't know what's going on here.
My TV's doing something funky here. Let me see.
Oh my goodness.
What's that?
Who's joining us?
Hey guys, thought I might crash your little watch party. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I don't know if you're synced up with me, but I'm looking at you and
Ma Kent
at the, what are you going to do? What's your plan?
Oh, nice. In the cemetery?
Yeah. Are you going to like maybe get a job at a newspaper?
Oh, something like that. Somewhere I can keep my ear to the ground.
Something like that. That's right. Oh yeah, and then just the baby Clark and his dog. That was me running around the yard with the trying to get that dog not to bite me on the ankles when I was running. He was biting me a little bit. He's biting the kid, which was pretty funny. Just, I mean, not hard, but you know, just enough where
it's like hurting. Yeah.
No blood was shed, but it was enough to like, he kept going like, can someone tell this dog I'm trying to do my thing here? And the dog keeps attacking me. And I was like, oh, it's cool. It looks great.
Right.
But yeah, it's good fun. Yeah. Well, it's good to see. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah. I thought I might show you guys where I've been hanging my cape for the past few months. I'm good. I'm just, working through isolation, really, and using things like this to entertain myself.
Oh, nice. Sorry. I was like one of my favorite shots of the tie. Remember we had to put a wire. So we had Henry on like some sort of rig, and then we put a wire in his tie so it could stay flapping because I really wanted to get that flapping tie shot. I couldn't remember you going like, geez, okay, fine.
Yeah, you kept coming back and be like, no, how about now? We just tilt it just a little bit. And I was like, really? How is it not flapping anyway? But we were on a bike for some of those shots, but then we were on a special rig for others where I wasn't even.
Yeah, yeah. Biking, yeah, yeah. Right? Then you were just really on the bike for some of them. And we had we had this really kind of hilarious, like fixie, you know, those kind of hipster fixie bicycle, and we thought it would be really easy. And like, it was like, I guess it was set like in like eighth gear, so like Henry would be like, could you guys give me a bike that's easy to ride, for God's sake?
Yeah, there was some hills, those up to big bridges, and I was like, really, can I get a real bike? Does Clark have to be this cool?
Oh, the glasses here.
Oh yeah, the glasses. This is the first glasses look. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we went through quite a few glasses.
Look at what does that mean? Welcome to that Man of Steel. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. That's a good movie. That was fun.
It was actually a lot of fun to watch that again. It's been a while, and I do really like that movie.
Yeah, I love it.
A lot of fun memories.
What was your favorite scene to shoot, Henry?
Favorite scene to shoot.
Sounds like
a reporter. Yeah, my favorite scene to shoot. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say to shoot because I have fond memories of shooting all the scenes. That was a massive part of my life and a big fulcrum point. But I think what I loved watching the most was that really cool moment where Supes gets up after being floored by the world engine and then just, you know, slowly standing up through the gravity beam and then just nails it. That was, that turned out really, really cool. But there are so many cool scenes in the movie. It's tough to pick just one.
Yeah, that's an amazing, I agree. That's an amazing scene. I really love it. So
How about yours, Debbie? Zach, what was your favorite scene to shoot?
My favorite scene to shoot, I think, although it was also the hardest, was the Smallville battle. I think that was the most exciting to see all that stuff happen. But I also remember it was like 100 and like some odd degree. It was really hot. And it was hot for me, but you guys were all in those suits. And I remember the cooling systems that we had to stick in because, you know, it was dangerous at one point. We had to keep you guys cool. But it was just exciting to see that come to life and to be in the town.
I think it was literally 100 degrees and you guys were in basically wetsuits. I remember one time Henry would go like had like his suit and he pulled the sleeve of his suit and like sweat
just AKA gushing out.
A garden hose of sweat poured out. And I was like, oh my God, that's
It was very, very hot. I remember everyone trying to usher me into air conditioned rooms in between setups and takes. And I was like, guys, I've got to stay one temperature. If you keep on getting me cool, it's going to be miserable for me every time I go back into the heat.
Yeah, I'm going to have pneumonia next time I walk out there. That's cool. It was like, it was a version of like, you know, you were like Swedish, you know, how if you go from a sauna to the snow, but it was in reverse.
Yeah, that was a fun sequence actually. How long did that sequence take? It was a while.
The Smallville sequence, I think, was a week. We shot for a week of just fighting. Yeah, it was intense.
By the way,
it might have been more.
And the town was so great too, because they had to shut down.
Yeah, they let us. They let us pretty much.
Plano. Yeah.
Yeah, destroy that town. That was good.
No. And then I think they were having, because afterwards, I think a lot of people came to the town because they wanted to see.
I think for a while there was a museum. Like a museum. I mean, it's cool. Let's call it that, but I don't know.
A thing. Yeah, a building. A room.
It was great.
It had artifacts in it, really important artifacts.
They were so friendly, and I remember the police department and fire department, they were so helpful.
Oh, yeah, I had my Plano police department t-shirt I used to wear all the time.
I remember driving to work every day. Well, I didn't drive, but being driven to work every day. And there were kryptonite cookie signs and stuff at all the farms. And that was a nice touch. It made us all feel really at home there. So thank you, Plano.
By the way, it was beautiful. Do you remember the cicadas when we shot at the farm? They were so loud. I remember we had, it was just so loud, all the sounds. I remember all the production problems. I was sound got ruined.
I was good. Oh, yeah, the sound totally did get ruined.
We had to ADR all of that.
Because it was like, cricket, and the bad cicada. Anyway.
I don't know, that was pretty good, Zach.
thank you. I'm known for my cicada imitation. I sometimes ask. I'm asked to do it at parties all the time. And I'm like, guys, I don't. It's embarrassing. I'm so good at it. I was going to do some Q&A with some fans, but you're here. Do you want to?
Hey, yeah, I'm in.
Want to join in and hear some of these?
I think we have some people that we can have join our Zoom here.
Cool. Thank you.
Where's Danny? Is Danny there?
Hi. So I have a question.
Yeah.
That is the mother of all our questions as a fandom.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's serious.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
I'm scared.
I'm scared of it, too.
Yeah, yes. Me, too.
When will you release the Snyder Cut?
There it is. There it is.
Yes.
There
it is. Is it us releasing
this? Yeah, when will I release it?
Don't cut the stream this time.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. look, you know, the truth is, you know, I'm not 100%, you know, me personally, I'm not really, and I've said it before, I'm not really in control of it necessarily, right? Like, I mean, I've said it exists and I've been very clear with my, like, what I, what I did with it, you know, and but that, you know, it's not really up to me per se. If it was up to me, I would have probably already like left it on a thumb drive in a bathroom somewhere. And so like, look, I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Henry? It's a hard question.
I don't know. For me, having just watched Man of Steel, this for me was such a big moment, because I remember when that first trailer dropped, which I hadn't been privy to beforehand, and I just saw it with everyone else. And I remember exactly what I was going through in my life at the time. I remember where I was, remember who I watched it with, and then I watched it about 1,500 times after that. And that whole experience of shooting the movie was a life changer for me. The whole experience of the press tour, watching the movie, it was definitely a fulcrum point which changed my life from what it was then to what people perceive now as, you know, being famous or whatever it is. And that was a massive shift for me. And I remember so much of it in very, very exacting detail and with all of the emotions in touch. I mean, I was going through a lot at the time as well, sort of aside from the work stuff. But it was for me a massive, massive journey. And I loved watching it. I still love watching that movie. And I will remember those days until the very end for me. It's been a long journey since. I do think it would be fun to perhaps have, you know, worked with a trilogy or a trilogy a bit differently. And I would love to see a version of Justice League without the mustache. And
but yeah, you know, it was always my intention to like not, you know, I'd love to see that version of Superman without the mustache, or at least without the whatever that implication of a mustache.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah, without the mustache. It's an important thing.
Yeah, but I think seriously, like to see, I mean, we were on this journey and all these characters, I mean, it was this hero's journey for all these characters. And I think it's a shame that we never saw it come to fruition the way, you know, the way Zach intended it to be, you know.
Yeah.
To see them reach their journey to become, you know, the Justice League, the team that they, that
it would have been, it would, yeah.
It would have been, it would
listen,
have been
great. And look, it, like I told you, I have it. So it's just a question of like, we got to find a way to show it someday.
Yes.
I reckon you should show it.
What's that?
I reckon you should show it.
What, you think I should just show it?
Yeah, I think you should show
it. I reckon, well, you, yeah, too. I mean,
no disagreement here.
I think that, I mean, I don't have like, I can't show the movie right now, you know, because it's still a little bit to do, but I mean, there is this. I have this. I don't know if this is helpful. See that?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
We're
doing
it.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Get ready.
Finally!
Well, all right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you all.
Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.